Good morning and welcome into another edition of Big Talk College Sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. I'm Dalton Shetler alongside my partner, Sam Sprunger. Sam, how are we doing today?
It is Friday. It is not very good looking out, but at least it's Friday. It's time for the weekend.
It feels like you could just take the shot of you looking out the window and saying, not looking really good out, and just loop it for 4 months in the Midwest. Like that's
Well, it's close to 6 months, Dalton, if you want to really be truthful about it. But yes, you could absolutely do that. And it would mean absolutely the same thing because that is the way things happen in the Midwest.
Yeah, pretty much. That's the life as we know and love. A lot to get to in this episode. We got a lot of Big Ten men's basketball, women's basketball, because look, I don't know if people are quite understanding where we are, but I sometimes lose track. If I feel like every year you get older, like time just becomes more and more sped up on you. But the Big Ten basketball season, we're ending January here in the next handful of days, and we're getting ready to flip the month into February. We're getting close to getting towards the end of the regular season. We're at the halfway mark. Is really
isn't that exciting, though?
It like, is.
You're absolutely right. It takes forever to get here. It takes no time for it to go get done. But when it's here, it is literally just. Yes, it's a blur, but it's a fabulous blur to me.
It is. And I love basketball. It's just like I'm just sitting here just snorting basketball content for the last month or so. And I look up and I'm like, we only have really a month left of the regular season. Like, it's kind of amazing just how quick the whole season kind of plays on you.
CBLA, College Basketball Lovers Anonymous.
That's right.
Hi, my name is Dalton and I'm addicted to college basketball.
Yeah, that would be a thing. I watch so much Big Ten basketball, men's and women's, and there was a great game last night on the women's side, which we'll be getting to a little bit later.
Sure, we will.
But there's a couple of news items we want to get to first. One, yes. Let's start off with Jim Harbaugh, the reigning now national champion coach of the year, leaves the University of Michigan, accepts the job with the LA Chargers as the next head coach. Sam, your thoughts on this?
Well, I am not shocked by any means, and anybody that is shocked or says they are, I really don't know what to say about it, because this has been coming, like I said a couple of weeks ago, is I've been doing podcasting or some sort of sports or whatever analysis for 4 years, and every single year it's been, where's Jim Harbaugh going to go? Even though he was in the throes of, at the time, his fourth year, and now, or fourth or fifth year, and now he's at the end of, what, eight or nine of being at Michigan. It's just, it does not surprise me. It's about time.
He started in 2015, so yeah, you're about right with that time window. And yeah, I mean, these flirtations have intensified and they've reoccurred time and time again.
When he takes National Signing Day to go interview for an NFL job, that tells you he's not really 100% serious, even if he tells you he's a Michigan man.
Yeah. And I think, honestly, this was one of those situations where you look at the LA Chargers, not to break down too much of the NFL, but I feel like if you're somebody, and this is going to be really generalizing macro level surface stuff, but if you're somebody who's getting ready to take a job in the NFL, I think the number one thing you look at is the quarterback position.
Oh, yeah.
If I get a top 10 quarterback in the league, let's see what we can do. And you get Justin Herbert there and a Chargers team that kind of keeps flirting around 500. I think that's an ideal situation. It's a lot different than the Falcons job that opened up because
that's
quarterback
a
situation's unstable. You know what I mean?
And the thing is with the Chargers is for years, and you're right, I don't want to get too much into the NFL analysis, but this is a good correlation because it's the, Harbaugh's finally leaving.
Yes.
The thing with the Chargers is, as many times they've been said, even with Philip Rivers back when he was there, there were coaches' decisions that made them maybe miss situations to get to the next level, be it the Super Bowl, be it the next level of the playoffs, be it whatever, the one seed. A lot of times, not every year, but a lot of times it was, man, they just, the coaching decisions were not there. that's, I think, is what LA is trying to do with it.
Yeah. And I think there's something there, potential with that. Now, maybe the most interesting part of this to me, and again, this comes from my own prism where, I mean, NFL, NBA, MLB, like I have like a rooting interest, but I'm not consumed with it like I am the Big Ten and just college sports level in general as I'm wearing my Detroit Lions hoodie.
By the way, they haven't been this far in your lifetime.
Correct. I have to be pretty honest, I have not been a lifelong Detroit Lions fan. I moved up to Michigan and saw Dan Campbell get hired, and I was like, you know what?
I like him.
Yeah, I do. I was from the introductory press conference, I was like, that wasn't coach speak. Like that was kind of fun.
And the fact that he went through the railing by a bunch of pundits saying, you know, this is rah-rah high school bull, you know, it'll never go through in the pro ranks. Look what he's done. And I'm not saying, and I hope they win someday, but I'm not even saying they will. They're in one game away from being in the Super Bowl. So to tell me that he doesn't know what he's doing, sorry, don't believe it. But anyways.
And to your point, I mean, it is inspiring the way the communities come together, the way everything has been up here. It's been nuts up here in the state of Michigan. It has been so much fun just to see people come together this way. It was, it's been pretty cool. But to the point, like we were talking about, to me, because the NFL isn't my primary focus or interest, my next question following this news is, who does replace Jim Harbaugh at Michigan? I have a guess. What do you have?
Urban Sam? Meyer. Can you imagine
the heel turn comes out? Can you imagine
how the world would just explode if Urban Meyer was named the next coach of Michigan?
You just hear a glass shatter, and then by God, it's Urban Meyer!
He busts through like the Kool-Aid Man. Oh yeah!
Oh god!
In navy blue and maize. It's not gonna happen. But can I dream?
Yeah, that's you know what though? Speaking with somebody with Michigan State rooting interest, please don't. Please don't.
He only wins everywhere he goes. So let's
except for Jack.
And see, that's just it. People were like, "Well, he was horrible in Jacksonville." But so was Nick Saban in the pro ranks. And you're talking about him as potentially the greatest coach ever. I don't ever take professional. Lou Holtz was horrible with the Jets. You know, a lot of times they just don't correlate. Steve Spurrier blew in Washington. Like it makes sense that some coaches just are bad at the next level.
So if it's not Urban Meyer, who do you think is the next Michigan man?
I think it's going to be one of the two. Mike Hart might be one, but it was Sharon Moore. Sharon Moore. I think he'll probably be the one. He was the one that kind of took the helm when Harbaugh was suspended the second time.
Yeah, and kind of reading the tea leaves of the situation. There was an interview recently where Jim Harbaugh was talking with a reporter, and this is before the news even broke that he was hired by the Chargers. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about Michigan, and he used the phrase, there's a bit of a passing of the torch. We weren't given a lot of context. There wasn't anything specific, but I mean, if you grab that line, I mean, it kind of makes sense to think maybe it's somebody like Sharon Moore who was filling in for him there late in the season.
Well, and I don't know, now, I mean, they made the comment that they knew who they were going to put in place if Harbaugh left. Now, I don't know, honestly, if they actually made the announcement of who it would be. But the fact that they said, you know, they did that, I think, basically to save face, to be able to tell their potential recruits, hey, you know, this is who's going to be in charge in case Coach Harbaugh leaves.
Yep.
But now he left so quickly. Now you could go get somebody if you wanted.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be, more probably maybe Hart. But you know, honestly, you're at that little, here's the thing. You've got a little bit of a window to where you could say, okay, well, we're going to give you 2 years, you know, or whatever. And if he keeps building, whoever the replacement is, keeps building and does well, we'll keep giving you some years until you've earned these. This is going to be their first try at a head coaching job anywhere. and you're going to take over the University of Michigan, the reigning national champions, and going into the first year of a 12-year playoff. It's a new college football world. We'll give you a couple years to see if you actually are what it takes for us to be successful in this new world. If not, we can go find somebody else.
Well, and if you did go with an outsider, who would the outsider maybe be?
Golly, I don't know if you make a push for Dan Lanning or something like that. Honestly, I would have to think that there is a phone call made to Urban Meyer. I'm not joking about that. Maybe a phone call to see, hey, are you even interested? And he may laugh you off the phone, but at least it's worth making the dialing the phone, right?
Can I throw out what I was brainstorming and came across as a fascinating and kind of comedic solution?
Sure.
What if the phone call goes to Baton Rouge?
Oh, golly. I heard that as a possibility. Oh, my goodness. Do you think that accent would leave town or leave or stay in town as soon as he left Baton Rouge?
The Kelly family packs their bags and heads back up, because think about it. He's coached at Central Michigan. He's coached at Grand Valley, obviously coached at Notre Dame. He's got a lot of
that area of the country.
And I think the heel turn, I mean, we talk about heel turns going from at once a Notre Dame coach to becoming the Michigan coach. That's a heel turn in a career path.
You know, honestly, if they're really not going to go with the assistants that are in place, he might be the smartest move, honestly. If they can pay him enough money to make him leave after 2 years of being in Baton Rouge, it probably would be the best to make Brian Kelly your next coach.
Well, and you brought up the...
He's established.
You brought up the Southern accent and that it might drop. What... When he gets to the Chrysler Center and is addressing the Michigan fans as the new head coach, what are some of the things he needs to say to establish himself as a Michigan man? Like, what are some of those lines?
For over 5 years, I've always thought Michigan was fabulous.
I think you get asked a question, you got to make sure you drop like a no, yeah, or a yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh,
yeah, yeah. Getting onto the floor. Oh. Excuse me.
Oh. Yeah.
Oh. Heading out
That's
there.
Completely a Midwestern thing. Oh.
Oh. Yeah. I think you got to drop some of those in there to really establish yourself as a Michigan person.
I agree. But honestly, I honestly, if it's not one of the two, be harder more. Honestly, but here's the thing: they got to make a decision really quick because, Michigan's got what? Recruits there can leave for 30 days, correct? Because their coach left.
Mm-hmm.
But Michigan doesn't have the capability of filling in all those great players because they're already gone. So if they don't hire the right person, you may see a max exodus of these players, and Michigan may suffer next year. Honestly, I don't know that it's suffer is a bad word. Maybe see a downswing. I think Alabama's going to be that way because of the timing that Nick Saban left them in. It's not saying that he didn't have the ability or the right to leave when he did. Mm-hmm. It was the matter of he did it, and most of those good players that were in the portal are no longer there. And they can't just up and enter again because the portal is closed, technically, except for those places that college coaches have left.
And it's interesting because, I mean, to your point, there's no real great time to pick up and leave or retire or whatever. Yeah,
because your job is 24/7, 365 as a coach.
Correct. But yeah, I'm definitely fascinated to see how that transpires here in the upcoming future. Big Ten basketball. We'll shift gears and get into this.
Yes.
With Big Ten men's basketball, we had another upset at Welsh Ryan Arena. I mean, that place is starting to climb the leaderboard on places you don't want to visit if you're a good team.
Well, and if you're not a good team, you have a shot because Chicago State went in and beat them there.
That's true. But Northwestern beats number 10 Illinois in overtime. Boo Booey does his thing. The Cats get a win. And now you're looking at a Northwestern team who at home, besides that loss to Chicago State, has defeated number 1 Purdue, has beat Michigan State and beat number 10 Illinois this season, all at Welsh Ryan Arena. I mean, Sam, unless we're talking about completely bottoming out, Northwestern's a tournament team now.
Oh, for sure. And I'm looking at Mike DeCourcy's bracketology, and he's got them comfortably in.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, not that they were on the bubble or that there was doubt, but like that win, it just had this feeling of, okay, you can lock it.
And this might even be late enough that it's going to be higher next week. And we actually are going to have Mike on next week to where we can talk to him about where Northwestern, how comfortable is Northwestern and how they can move up even more. Because honestly, I think the big thing is don't lose to teams you shouldn't lose to.
Yeah.
Make Chicago State the anomaly of your losses and make your other losses good losses. You know, those quad ones.
If that Chicago State loss didn't exist.
Oh my goodness, they're ranked.
I mean, it's insane what their resume is. Like that Chicago State loss is just an anchor, just dragging down all the other merits of the resume. But again, it's been so good and they've had so much success that it may not matter by the end.
It's like a Michelin star chef wearing a nice white chef's coat, big white, a big green spot of something right in the middle of it. Like he looks perfect. And then all of a sudden you've got this white or this big spot. In the middle of it. That's the Chicago State loss to Northwestern.
Pretty much. And we mentioned
Boo Boo. I'm proud of that
analogy. Yeah. That's pretty good. It's pretty good. Bowie had 29 points in that win for Northwestern as they beat Illinois in overtime 96-91.
And if you remember, we had Mike DeCourcy on last year at the right around this time, and he said that of his time ever covering basketball, college basketball, which goes back to the mid 80s, Boo Booey has made the biggest jump from starting talent to current talent, and that was last year.
And that's when Booey started, was the mid 80s.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, I think he's got grandchildren getting ready to enroll at Northwestern, but not the point. But my point being is for someone like Mike DeCourcy to say that about Boo Booey, he's seen a ton of basketball players go through, ton of great basketball players go through. For him to say that about Boo Boo, he says a lot. I'm interested to see what his thoughts are. Is he still skyrocketing, or has he plateaued and Northwestern's just reaping the benefits of that progression?
Well, and I think you're right. Well, and it's fascinating too, because again, think back 2 years ago, we were having discussions about Chris Collins being on the hot seat, which I thought at the time
beginning of last year,
out of touch. Yeah. Like, that's what I mean. Like, it felt to me out of touch because, again, he took you to the NCAA tournament and won a game, something the school had never done before Collins got there. And then last year, they reworked themselves into a defensive identity. And between Chase Audige and what he was able to give on the defensive end of the floor, and in Boo Booey's maturity. And I think that's a big part of what DeCourcy was talking about. The maturity, the poise, the composure, like the jump we saw in Boo Booey that way was able to run the show. And of course, they made the tournament last year. And they're looking to make the tournament again. Now they don't have Chase Audige on that defensive side. But we're talking about a group that was probably picked to finish. I have to pull it up. But probably 13th, 14th in the Big Ten as of last year before that season started.
Oh, for sure. I know we didn't have them finishing second.
And then they turn into a tournament team, and this year they're looking to be in a tournament team again. Mm-hmm. A lot of that goes to Boo Booey and how good of a player he is. He's Big Ten first team, no doubt at this point.
Oh, I honestly, top three in player of the year for the Big Ten, honestly, I would think.
We know who wins player of the year already. Like that.
And you know, what's funny is I was going to bring this up as we talked about this at the beginning before basketball even started. And we said, okay, we know there's going to be a drop in Zach Edey's production, which I don't think we've seen that actually. Mm-mm. But you know, is he still just as valuable? I think he's going to be the first person since, Ralph Sampson to be two-time player of the year, national player of the year. Mm-hmm. It just, he is an anomaly that just nobody can defend him, yet he can mandate everybody pays attention to him. And it's, I think it's a foregone conclusion unless something happens to where, you know, it just doesn't become as apparent. But Boo Booey's definitely, in my opinion, top three in the Big Ten player of the year. At least top three.
what's interesting to me is who's probably number two and the situation that's brewing there in Champaign. Terrence Shannon Jr., obviously he's back on the floor now. There's so much to unpack with all of that, but Illinois having Terrence Shannon Jr., Illinois has turned into a team that if Shannon Jr. is able to play the rest of the year, if he's available, that's a group that can make the Elite Eight and maybe more.
I think they could make the Final Four, Dalton. I really do. With what they've shown without Shannon Jr. in the lineup and the fact that, you know, he's now able to be back in the lineup. And here, let me address this really quick. He's been charged. We live in a country where you're innocent until you're proven guilty. Let's not call him a dirt bag or anything. Keep your judgment to yourself until an actual judgment comes out. I am so, and this is me getting on a soapbox, Dalton, because I am so tired of people saying, well, he's a rapist. You know what? Ask Duke University lacrosse how they feel about being accused of something they didn't do. I'm not saying Terrence Shannon Jr. is 1,000% innocent or innocent at all. We don't know. So please keep your judgment until we know what's going on. I'm sorry, but this is just, it bothers me to what happens if that young man didn't do anything wrong and he's not able to play basketball because of an accusation and, oh, we don't want people to be mad at Illinois for playing him. So he doesn't get to play. If he's innocent, if he's not, it's going to come out. Let the judicial system play do its job. And until then, he's innocent until he's proven that he's not. I'm off my soapbox now.
You stepped down from it. But no, I mean, well, and that's what I think is maybe the most fascinating part of this is seeing the process play out where Board of Trustees are saying one thing, the university is saying one thing, and just how to handle this whole situation. And obviously it's messy. But as we stand right now, Terrence Shannon Jr. able to play and what that does to Illinois on the floor. Now, obviously on the floor is not the most important thing here. Not just trying to bury it, but I can't offer you anything else besides on the floor conversation really with this.
That's topic. All I will ever offer.
Yeah.
Just because it's not, for one thing, it's none of my business, but at the same time, I'm also not going to say that dirtbag shouldn't be playing because we don't know if he is. Maybe it was a dirtbag that accused him. We don't know this.
We'll hold, we'll reserve until we have a conclusion
Thank
you. But with Shannon Jr., I mean, I think right now he was in the running to be that second player of the year, just behind Zach Edey. So Illinois getting him back, that's pretty big. Earlier this week, also on Wednesday, Maryland just beat Iowa 69-67. The Terps bounced back. Jameer Young had a layup with 1.5 seconds left to go. And what was maybe the easiest game winner I've ever seen in my life.
Right?
It just got right to the rim. No contest
for him.
Laid it in. That was bizarre, but Maryland's a tough one to figure out, and Iowa's a bit difficult to understand too.
Well, that's the thing is we at one point we thought, and I still think that I don't think that they're top three, but I still think they're really underachieving because of what they could be, of what they've got in their cupboard. They're just not achieving. Now, they're not the most underachieving good team of the conference. We will talk about that. But Maryland is just, they're not achieving with what we assumed and knew that they were capable of. I mean, all of a sudden, going to College Park ain't the guaranteed loss that you were expecting, or at least, I'm sorry, a good chance at losing, no matter where you were at in your rankings. It's not the same anymore this year.
It's true. And that one's going to be interesting to me because tomorrow they host Nebraska, and Nebraska's coming off a big win against Ohio State. Where
the only thing about Nebraska is they haven't won on the road yet, unless they just did.
No. They won that one in Lincoln.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I thought it was.
So Rink Mast, one of their players, dropped a career-high 34 in that win over Ohio State. And after the game, he said exactly what Sam's alluding to.
It says they're 1-4 on the road, by the way. Did they win one on the road in non-conference play?
I'll take a look at that. But Rink was,
while you're talking. Go ahead.
Rink was getting exactly to what Sam alluded to. He said, look, it's fun scoring 34 points. It's fun having the career high, so on and so forth. But we got to win one on the road. Like, that was the mentality, and it was non-conference play. They beat Kansas State back in December. Yeah. But that one's going to be interesting. That's at noon tomorrow. You mentioned that maybe the team that had been the most underwhelming to this point, given the preseason expectations, was Michigan State. They're in action.
I didn't say a name, Dalton. You just assumed that's what I meant.
I was able to read through the coding. But Michigan State goes to number 13 Wisconsin tonight. That one tips off at 8 o'clock. This one's a bit interesting to me because Michigan State's playing a little bit differently than the first time these two teams met at the Breslin Center. And Michigan State, look, although that second half was ugly, not pretty, they were able to win against Maryland this last go-round. They only scored 17 points in that second half. But defensively, I think they figured some things out that'll really help boost them throughout the rest of the year.
Well, I keep waiting until they're eliminated. I will never say Tom Izzo's teams are out of it, but it just, we keep expecting more and more, and like, oh, they're turning it. And then they go lay an egg against somebody, and then they come back and storm back and play like that. We assume they were gonna, and then they lay an egg against somebody. This is the most bipolar Tom Izzo team I've ever witnessed in my life, because I've seen some bad performing Michigan State teams, but they do it in big clumps or for a full season. They don't go, oh, hey, we're going to be the fifth best team in the country. We're going to lay it to Baylor and beat them by 8,000 points. And then we're going to go lose to Northwestern. You know, that's a poor choice because James Madison, you know, whatever, you know, they're just are teams that they should not be performing poorly against, that you just don't know what in the world's happening with Michigan State.
See, and this is what's fascinating. And I had this talk earlier this week with somebody, and they were kind of asking about, you know, the inconsistency of Michigan State.
Yeah.
I'm like, look, to your point, it feels pretty extreme, the ups and downs of the squad. But I point to last year. Last year, Michigan State would have a stretch where offensively they were one of the best three-point shooting teams, if not the best in the country. Right. And then other stretches, meanwhile, not guarding during that time. And then they'd have another stretch where they guarded really well and couldn't shoot the ball. And they couldn't piece it together until they got to the NCAA tournament. Literally, they lost in the Big Ten tournament to Ohio State. Momentum was not good.
Ohio State lost 14 in a row at one point during Big Ten season, and Michigan State lost to them in the tournament.
And then they just got to the NCAA tournament and said, all right, let's dance. And they just beat USC. Yeah, I mean, they just beat down USC. They beat down a great Marquette team, and they probably should have beaten Kansas State if Kansas State just wasn't destined to win that game with some of the shots they hit in that one. I mean, that just really is what it is. Like, they were destined to win that game. Right. But I think about that a lot, that Michigan State last year was really inconsistent. And much to your point, Tom Izzo's got some sort of secret formula he cooks up in the kitchen where he's able just to get things to gel at a certain point. And I think really what we're looking for here in this next week or so is seeing the ingredients prove to be valuable defensively. We now saw a little bit of like the potential of what this team can be on defense. Here in the next couple of weeks, let's see what the offense can be too. And I think eventually then your hope is to pair them together. But I thought defensively they got a really good sign in what they saw from their trip to College Park.
Yeah, well, they got a win in College Park. that's one thing, you know. When you win in College Park, that's a big feather in your cap, and that means you've done something the correct way. And I just see this being as something that Michigan State could, you know, if they sneak in right now, I'm looking and they're an 11 seed by Mike DeCourcy. They could be a VCU where they make it to the Final Four as an 11 seed. I'm not saying they're gonna, but like that's how dangerous Michigan State is. You don't care about the seed that's on their left. You just look at their matchups and go, well, they could make it to the Final Four this year. Do we have that capability?
No, I think it's going to be really interesting. So I'm very much looking forward to see what.
Did you freeze, Dalton? Dalton. Okay. Well, I apologize about that, but Dalton froze up and looks like maybe I don't think I did, but it will be interesting to see what they have done or what Michigan State does to recover in the second half of the season. I'm hoping that maybe Dalton will be able to come back in here shortly. But I wanted to send him a message. Let's add on our bracketology from Mike DeCourcy, and we're going to look at what he's got set for the Big Ten and what he's got set for the Big Ten in the brackets here coming up. We're going to zoom in just a little bit. Let's look at the East and what he's got. Or actually, let's start at the top. And I forgot to put a little Big Ten logo right here next to the number one team in the Midwest, the Purdue Boilermakers. This hasn't changed at all from bracket. Dalton, we're talking. Thanks for coming in. It looks like you froze up there on us.
Yeah, I sure did. And I think my computer is showing that it might work again. So I'm going to try and get in on that way instead of the phone. That way it's better quality for our audience.
We're talking about right now, I will fill you in while you're trying to remedy that, is Mike DeCourcy, Purdue's still the number one team in the Midwest. Do you see that as, okay, Purdue's in the Midwest, they're in the Midwest bracket, according to Mike DeCourcy. Is this they're the number one overall seed reward?
That's interesting. I don't know how DeCourcy has that math. That's actually a good question. But you certainly would imagine Purdue's in that conversation. And if they take care of business, they definitely will be in that spot. I got in on the computer, but it is still lagging pretty bad. We're going to stick to the phone, Sam, just so you know, for our listeners.
Do you see this as being oh, shoot, I forgot what I was going to say. Never mind. Go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off for no reason, apparently.
No. But let's go ahead and talk about some of these teams and their prospects in getting in further. Illinois, we've been talking about the Illini a little bit. Right now, a 4 seed in the NCAA tournament. And we talked about if Terrence Shannon Jr. is able to play as of now, he's out there on the floor. I think 4 seems to be fitting. That could maybe even creep up higher.
That's what I was thinking, is there a possibility that they move into a 3, maybe even a 2, depending on how the rest of the season plays out?
And there's certainly opportunities there with the Big Ten schedule, as we know, and how difficult it is, how much of a grind it is. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in that. So you have Purdue, you have Illinois there. Are there any other Big Ten?
A couple in the 10 line there.
Look at Northwestern and Nebraska both being 10 seeds. We mentioned this last week. Nebraska, the only Big Ten school who has yet to get an NCAA tournament win, that might change this year. I mean, I'm personally so happy for Fred Hoiberg and what he's been able to do this season to finally get a squad there in Lincoln that is able to kind of reach this type of standard. But I think they absolutely could pick up an NCAA tournament win this year. They've got somebody who can get hot like Keisei Tominaga. I like the role players. We talked about Rink Mass scoring 34 the other night against Ohio State. I really like that team as a whole. I think maybe this could be their year.
Yeah, and I agree. To have somebody of name like Keisei Tominaga and being able to, have that be the identity of their team, it allows those role players to really step out and do something to provide. And Casey's going to score. That's what he does. He scores. That's what he does. But when it comes to the role players, when they don't have the the concentration on them, they tend to do better. And I think that you're right. I think this could be, honestly, with the way that plays out, they're aggressive enough that if this were the tournament, I might even pick them to beat Tennessee.
Oh, wow.
They're aggressive. Nebraska's aggressive enough. That's my thing, is they're not timid. You know, they go and they put a body on somebody. They will play hard. That's Tennessee's MO. So I think they could play well with them. The only problem is it's not in Lincoln.
Well, and my thing is, I don't know if it's just because of my name, but a Dalton Connect fan to a core. Like, Dalton Connect is a baller, and he is so much fun to watch at Tennessee. I just feel like I might go Tennessee a ways because I really like that team.
I'm not saying that they will, but I honestly think that they
can. I hear you. Who else from the Big Ten do we have here?
Well, you have first four out.
Yes. Ohio State, we mentioned they just lost to Nebraska earlier. They've got a game coming up this weekend, I think with Northwestern. I'm pulling that up in front of me. I'm so used to using my phone to research things while we go, but now I'm switching. They're in Evanston. That tips at 8:30 tomorrow night. That's one of those wins Ohio State kind of needs to go and get. I mean, Ohio State's going to have to start picking up some of these here in Big Ten play.
Well, and that puts a big feather in their cap. If they can go to Northwestern and win that game, that's going to be a big feather and a big mark on their resume to maybe get them off that first four out and work their way into the last four in, and maybe even to a bye game. This is the start of that, because they, if I remember right, maybe this wasn't the right school, they've got a bunch coming up. Yeah, they play Illinois, then they get a reprieve at Iowa, but then they got to go to IU, at Maryland, or versus Maryland. They play versus Indiana, versus Maryland, and at Wisconsin. This is a hell strip, and then Purdue after that. So, like, they have a murderer's row of what they're getting ready to play. So if they can start it off with some wins, and maybe they might be able to work their way into a regular bye.
No, that's a good point. And then on the left side, given my phone screen, I can't actually read those.
There is nobody in the West, according to Mike DeCourcy, but we'll move over to
the East,
where you've got two more Big Ten teams there.
Wisconsin, a 2 seed, Michigan State, an 11 seed. We mentioned those two teams play tonight. And yes. Sam, a point I was going to make before my internet just left me alone, stranded. For Michigan State, we talked about this about a week or two ago, that there was a 7-game stretch coming up where it was a little bit soft, not the right word, but it wasn't the very best all the time. Like, they had kind of, it was a front loaded schedule for them in conference play. We knew they had a couple matchups with Rutgers, with Minnesota, all coming up. And we said there's a 7-game stretch. Michigan State needs to take care of business in this stretch. This Wisconsin game will be game 4 of that stretch. Michigan State's won the last 3. So far, Michigan State checking the boxes. They're taking care of business, as we said. Like, that was going to be an important stretch for them to take care of business. If they get a win at Madison tonight, which I don't think is out of the realm of possibilities. I think it's difficult. I think it's an uphill climb. I really like Wisconsin's team. I like the depth. I like the way they play, grinding things out. I like the dynamics they have as well. I sung Purdue's praises before the year constantly, because I told you they got some athleticism now. They got Lance Jones transferred in, Miles Colvin, somebody who's flashy and kind of has an athletic nature to him that a lot of Purdue guards haven't had recently outside of like a Jaden Ivey. But Ivy was forced to play out of position due to the team's needs. So it was different. Much the same way Wisconsin throwing in AJ Storr as a transfer, they've gotten a little bit more multidimensional. They've gotten a little bit more dynamic athletically. John Blackwell does a great job in there as a giving a boost there too. And it just centers around the core of Tyler Wall, Stephen Crowell, Connor Assegin, Chucky Hepburn. Like, I really like that Wisconsin team.
Hasn't Chucky Hepburn been there like 16 years?
It kind of feels like it, but I will always remember him banking in the shot
yes,
to win a Big Ten title. What year was that?
Wait. Let me undo the wound so you can pour the salt in it there. Jeez. It was against Purdue, Jaden Ivey's last year. So it'd been, what, 2 years ago?
Okay. 2022. Yeah. How about that too? It's so funny that, again, nobody talks about Wisconsin, but they won the Big Ten title in 2022. They shared in 2020. Like, they're always right there. Last year was a dip for them, but they're always right there. This year, they're hanging around. Like, Wisconsin's going to contend for this thing.
Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. I really do not think that they're headed anywhere. They're going to be comfortably stopped at the top of the rankings, and it's not going to change. And that's just what Wisconsin does. They don't stay bad for long. That's the big thing, is they don't stay bad for long if they are bad.
Well, and that gives a lot of credit to Greg Gard, who took over for what was such an established program already with Bo Ryan and Bennett before then. And Gard just picked up his 100th Big Ten win, so congratulations to him. But again, it should give a lot of credit to Greg Gard and the job he does. Definitely one of the most underestimated coaches in the conference. And hey, since we're talking about milestone wins, going back to Michigan State for a moment, Sam, tonight, if Michigan State beats Wisconsin, that'll be the 700th win for Tom Izzo in his coaching career, which is amazing.
I'm amazing. And if you want to drive to Wisconsin, Dalton, you can watch the game for $21.
That's not too bad.
It's not bad at all. That's two teams that should be tournament teams next year playing. You could for just over $20.
Well, and what's interesting about that too is talked with on another program, Scott Ritchie of the Champaign News Gazette. He had done a column where he ranked the toughest arenas for Big Ten opponents to go to. And the Kohl Center ranked maybe surprisingly low. And what I found interesting about it, because I think he had it ninth, if memory serves right. Ninth out of the Big Ten conference. Right? And Ohio State was 11th, if memory serves correct, as well. So it was somewhere in there, 11th or 12th. Those are the only two schools that share their Big Ten floor as a hockey rink. And I wonder if that takes away some from the atmosphere of those two places. And I've been to both, and it does feel like the crowd is further away at those two places.
Well, yeah, because you've got the hockey, the ice, where you put chairs, but you don't necessarily pack them as close as you would if it were just a basketball-only arena.
And it doesn't feel on top of you. Like, it's interesting kind of how that works. But
you've got your court and your first few rows that are on the same plane. Then all of a sudden it starts moving up, and maybe that's why it seems like it's more, open because of that.
If you were curious, Mackey Arena did land number one.
As it should.
I got no argument. I think Mackey Arena is just about the best place to go.
Best place ever.
It's the worst place to go. But I think from an atmosphere standpoint, it's just tremendous what they do in West Lafayette.
I would say there are 13 other teams that would take that home court advantage.
Yeah, just about. And I do think some are pretty close. Like, I don't think there's a huge drop-off between a couple schools. But I definitely do think right now that's the top of the top at this time. Let's switch over to women's basketball for a moment, Sam.
For a few minutes.
Last night, Northwestern nearly picked off a big win against Penn State.
Who would have seen that one coming?
Not at all. But Penn State was able to hang on. Penn State's a team I really think is going to climb the leaderboard on the women's side. Getting Ashley Owusu back, McKenna Marisa being healthy.
They've won
now.
Four in a row, Dalton.
I'm telling you, I think Penn State's going to really soar up the standings. I don't think they win the Big Ten title. I think that's a three-team race, as we've talked about. But I think Penn State's going to be right up there as they continue on. A game outside of the Big Ten last night was huge. It was South Carolina, which I guess is USC, South Carolina and LSU playing down in Baton Rouge. It was a top 10 matchup. The gym was packed down there at LSU. It was on ESPN. It was an amazing atmosphere, a great game. But it goes to show you again, the popularity of women's basketball just continues to rise.
Well, and I saw that South Carolina beat LSU by 9. I believe it was 79-70 is what they ended up winning by.
Game was closer than that throughout, but LSU actually controlled it for a long period of time. Then Angel Reese got in foul trouble and actually fouled out pretty early on.
It's pretty simple. LSU is not an easy game to win, and so for South Carolina to win that game, that's a big feather in their cap on that one. To go back to Penn State,
stays undefeated. Go ahead.
Yeah. To go back to Penn State, they're two games out of first. So yeah. I don't anticipate all three of those teams losing more than two or more games. There might be one game for each of these teams. There's going to be multiples for some of the, at least one, maybe even two of these teams. But I don't foresee all three of these teams losing two or more games. Because you've got Ohio State, who's 7-1 in the conference. You have Iowa, 7-1 in the conference. And you have IU, 7-1 in the conference. Yep. It's a three-way battle. That's what it's going to look like.
Yep. It's going to be a fun race down the back half. You brought up Penn State. Penn State's got a tough group ahead in its schedule. And we've talked about a couple of those other teams. Nebraska still kind of holding court up there. I think they're in fourth right now in the Big Ten standings. They've played so well with Alexis Markowski averaging, I think, like 17 points a game right now.
Yeah.
And we talked about the two Big Ten newcomer coaches being Robin Fralick at Michigan State, the job she's done. Don Plitzewhite at Minnesota. They battled us last weekend. Michigan State played its worst game of the entire year. Minnesota beat them 69-50. And a lot of credit to Minnesota's defense. I thought what they did was pretty spectacular. But then they go on the road and lose to Wisconsin. But a big part of it, Sam, I don't know if this gets a lot of attention, but Minnesota hosted Michigan State Sunday, travel Monday, play Tuesday. They only had a day in between games, and it was a travel day. I think that plays a part.
Granted, it's only to Wisconsin, but still, that's travel. That's a full day of getting yourself to a different venue to play.
I can't remember in the regular season when there wasn't a day in between that wasn't a travel day. And like tournaments, right. All that stuff, it's all different. It can be goofy.
The thing with the tournament, though, there's a day off, but they're not traveling anywhere.
Correct. But I just mean, like, things can be out of sorts and, like, whatever. But regulars, that's a tough turnaround they were throwing at. And Wisconsin, I think, was coming off a week of rest. So that felt pretty brutal to me, to that Minnesota team.
But you know what? It builds character. Even though they lost, it will build some character to where maybe down the road they're going to say, oh, hey, we can do this. This is nothing compared to playing Michigan State on Sunday and then playing in Wisconsin on Tuesday. You know,
well, and
they can pull off it.
You're right. Well, and since you kind of talked about Michigan State there, they bounced back with a vengeance against Purdue.
Yeah.
This Wednesday night, they got a big win against the Boilermakers, scored 97 points in the win, got back to kind of what we've been seeing all year from this squad. But in it, you had career high performances. Theron Halleck had 24 points. Torrey Osmond had 23 points. Those are the two players coming off the bench for Michigan State. They combined for 47, Sam. That goes to show you. And it's what's interesting is, obviously, Michigan State's got three different players that are out for the season. With season-ending injuries, and it's a lot of the size. They're playing undersized. They entered the year undersized, and now they're thin on, like, how many players they really go with. Their player rotation sits at about 7, maybe 8, and you take a look at what they're able to do with the 47 points combined between Osmond and Halleck off the bench. And Robin Fraley talked about this after the game. Look, understand we don't have 100 bodies, but we kind of consider ourselves deep when coming off the bench is that kind of production, which is a bit of a fascinating twist.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the Big Ten. There are basically three groups. There are the top three, who nobody's going to touch those three. Yep. Then you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 teams in the middle, which is Penn State, Nebraska, Michigan, Minnesota, Michigan State, and Maryland. And then you have Wisconsin, Purdue, Illinois, Northwestern, and Rutgers as the bottom. Yep. That middle is going to do a lot about how deep this Big Ten goes into, or how many teams go in to the tournament. But some of these teams, you know, Michigan State could do something. Nebraska, the way they're playing, they could do something, pull off some wins. Penn State, the same. So we're talking about the second tier of the Big Ten being able to maybe make a little, not a, a Final Four run, but get to the second weekend run in that tournament and really put the Big Ten on, or put the rest of the world on notice that the Big Ten's for real.
And that's what Charlie Cream of ESPN does a lot of their bracketology on the women's side. And his latest bracketology had 9 Big Ten teams entered the
field. I believe it.
And and to your point, I think the parity of this, it, the men had this a short while ago in recent history where the parity is so severe. Like I looked a day or two ago, and between fourth place and 11th place, I think was 2.5 games, or it was fourth place and
3 games
place.
Now. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. Now. Wait, no. No, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it'd be 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Between 4 and 9, there is 1 game difference.
I mean, that's insane. That's insane, the hair splitting that's going on.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's all just jumped in the middle. So I think that's going to be fun to watch. If I can finish the Michigan State talk a little bit,
sure,
too.
Go ahead.
Mo Joyner hit 1,000 career points.
Yeah,
in that,
I saw the highlights.
Which was, yeah, that was pretty spectacular to see. Julia Arolt had 18 points, 9 boards, 5 steals, and 5 blocks for Michigan State in that
that's
win.
Have a day.
but talking about the 1,000 career points, Mo Joyner had that for Michigan State. Michigan's Layla Filia also just crossed the 1,000-point plateau over in Ann Arbor. And those two teams meet this weekend in what is, again, I think one of the most interesting games from Big Ten women's basketball this weekend.
Yeah, I'm on the men's side, Purdue goes to Rutgers. So, I mean, that that's
always look out whenever that's happening.
But yeah, like this weekend, Iowa plays Nebraska. That's not a bad matchup right now either.
That's a good one. That's 2 o'clock.
It's in Iowa City, though.
Yep.
And that's $156 if you want to go watch it.
The Caitlin Clark effect. It's something else.
But Michigan and Michigan State tomorrow at the Breslin Center.
And that's at noon
tip off. Yeah.
But that should be a great
one. It's a big
one.
Game because Michigan State resides ahead, or Michigan resides ahead of Michigan State right now.
Yeah.
So it will bring Michigan State and Michigan into a tie record-wise, but it'll obviously give Michigan State the advantage because they would have the head-to-head at that point. They still got one more meeting.
Yes,
but that's big for seeding in the Big Ten tournament if you can finish ahead of your rival. You always want to finish ahead of your rival.
Yeah, no, that's an exciting one, though. I think that one's going to be...
Agree.
Going to be pretty buzzing in East Lansing.
So can we, I know we're running low on time and we've got just a couple of minutes, but the court storming issue that we've run into, Matt Painter has been talking about it for years that they should, well, especially since every time they lose, there's a court storming, it seems, that he's requested that the Big Ten, the NCAA, whoever, kind of put some sort of regulation and timing to the court storming. And we saw a problem with that in Columbus this last weekend when Ohio State beat Iowa. Now, the severity of the run-in, I'm not going to get into that because it sure looked like she LeBron James did. But I'm not. There needs to be something done with court storming.
Well, what would your take be on that? What would
you would have to? I honestly I don't know. That's the problem. Is I don't have any sort of other short of saying court storming is allowed, but you have to wait to be released. I mean, but you know, their college kids are either not in their right mind because you know what you do in college, or they're just not going to listen. So, but like, I don't know if they're, you know, they make the examples of those people that go forward before they're released onto the court. I don't know what that entails because I don't want to get into, well, you arrest them. No, that we, yeah, they're trespassing, kick them out, whatever. But I don't know what that is, but you can't have the one thing I thought about was What happens if Northwestern beats Illinois? And it happened. But I don't know that Northwestern stormed the court. If they did, I was going to say, I don't think they did. What would have happened if they would have and Terrence Shannon Jr. was on that court?
Mm-hmm.
That, so, like, I'm not saying Caitlin Clark got run into by a fan who was not paying attention to her. Correct. So there was, to me, the replays of those of the video was not malicious by the fan who ran into her. The reaction she had when she got run into might have been a little LeBron James-ish, but she rightfully did react. Like she LeBron got ran James into.
The verb for it. That's so funny. That keeps making me laugh.
But my point is you know, that shouldn't even be an issue. Like you shouldn't have to worry about your star running into somebody that's not paying attention.
See, and I think you mentioned Matt Painter's given voice to this in the past, and I think Matt had said in his tangent about the topic, he had talked about, you know, look, we all love court storms. You sure. Get it. You're excited. Like, yeah. The point isn't to just absolutely say no court storms, but there's got to be a certain security attention on the visitors. That way they get out safely. And you've seen a couple of times where they've been able to stop the clock. They let the opposing team get off the floor, and then they finish the final second, and so the spectators can storm the court. Look, I don't have specific answers, and I don't know all the logistics that go into detail, but there has got to be a bigger priority and emphasis on those visitors as they go to leave the court. And I think we can all agree with that. But I do think you and I both are of the same mind where court storms are memorable. They're magical. It's part of what makes college sports so awesome.
Well, for sure. I'm not opposed to court storming. I'm not opposed to them in any way. And
it's
we've got to
be done in a more safe way.
Correct.
Yeah. Oh, we definitely do have lag. I just saw you respond to me. Okay, so we put a bow on the court storm topic anyway. I think it's about time we get on out of here. Sam, let everybody know where they
can find us. Yes, sir. On the TikToks, the Instagrams, and the platform formerly known as Twitter, we are at B1G_talk. That's B1G_talk, Dalton, not BIG_talk. If you go to Facebook, look up Big Talk, BIG Talk. If you click on All Big Talk, then we've got an issue because you're not coming to us to see us. But coming soon, I'm going to let you guys know, coming soon, we will have a website to where you will be able to access all of our material from there and get to where we're distributed as well. But we're every week, we're on the ASAP network, 9 o'clock every morning or every Friday morning. It is now after 10 o'clock. So apologies for overrunning a little bit, but there was a lot to talk about, Dalton. But then later in the day through Lounge Media Group, we will release our show. If you want to see the video stream, go to Spotify. That's where we've got that. So there we go.
Perfect. Well, do want to thank all of you so much for tuning in and joining us for another edition of Big Talk. As technical difficulty and challenged as this episode was, still had a lot of fun.
I stumbled through when you froze up and went away for a couple of minutes. I stumbled just fine. Okay.
I don't know if you could even still hear me, but on my way out, I'm like, Sam, it's yours. I'll be back.
No, you froze up, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to take him out of the stream. We're going to cover some bracketology until he gets back.
None of that even happened on my end. I just was like, I kept talking into a void, and there was just nothing going. So we figured it out. We crossed the finish
line. We stumbled through. We stumbled, but we're good.
Had a great show. So thank you all so much for tuning in and joining us for another episode.
Next week, Mike DeCourcy, bracketology for most of, well, not bracketology for most of it, but Mike DeCourcy for most of the episode. We will be talking bracketology from the man himself.
Make sure you join us then. For Sam Sprunger, I'm Dalton Shetler. So long, everybody.
See ya.